Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Mad Dog Dynasty League headquarters in Miguanago, Wisconsin, Fat Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Come on in and enter the doghouse. Love that song. Do. Love that part. Look at me and tell me lies. Tell me my fantasy team is good. So many awesome lyrics in there, and let's not forget about the harmonica. The world needs more harmonicas. I mean, screw the kazoo. That thing's just irritating, but harmonicas are cool. And evidence of it, have you ever seen a bum that was playing the harmonica that frowned? I don't think so. Makes them happy. Makes me happy. And you know what else makes me happy? I'm your host. The commissioner of the Mad Dog Dynasty League brings me great happiness. The aforementioned fat guy with a phone himself, Rick Goreski. And what makes me incredibly happy is our co-hosts for tonight's show. They are so cool. First, he was once awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award, count them two years in a row. Put your hands together unless you're driving. And welcome on Mr. Steve Wellman.
More cowbell. Wellman.
You like the cowbell, huh?
Yeah, I like it. I like Christopher Walken. More cowbell.
Yeah, Christopher Walken. Yes, that's the one.
Yeah. Well, I like the song, but it needs more cowbell.
Let's keep it going here. Next up, he's a Grandmaster Yo Mama champion, the Blue Devil Mark himself, Mr. Tom Buckles. Bucko.
Do it. Do it.
I thought you'd have a nice Yo Mama joke ready for us.
Well, your mama's so hairy, she's got afros on her nipples.
Okay. Mama's so poor, she got into an elevator, thought it was a mobile home.
You gave me 2 seconds. I had to throw one off the tip of my tongue.
It's a good thing I did the PG-13 thing, because when you did the whole your mama's so hairy thing, the only one that I thought of is your mama's so hairy, you came out with rug burn.
Oh, jeez. Your mama's
get
so dry, your crabs carry canteens.
There you go. Everybody loves a good Yo Mama contest.
Yeah.
Guys, it's so great to have the two of you back in action here on the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. It's a little
good
late for this, but let's ease into it. Whoa, that shattered. Let's ease into things.
Well, why don't we just start off with the 1-9 for DJ, bro?
The 1-9.
For Julio in and you got a deal.
A little bit of trade talk action going on.
Oh God, it's gonna be now until
guys,
draft day.
It's a daily basis on the texting thing, so yeah. I didn't get a response from today's text.
That should tell
you
just about everything. No response.
Well, guys,
no response.
We've got some news here, NFL news. There is several things breaking. The first one, we'll start off with the downer. Sad news tonight as Steelers owner Dan Rooney has passed away. Rooney apparently was 84. I went to look up his bio in preparation for the show, and I saw that the guy, not only was he the president of their football operations or board or whatever the exact title was, but he was the United States ambassador to Ireland from 2009 to 2012. How about that?
Yeah.
And he was
no
appointed
idea.
By our Barack Obama appointed him that.
If you're going to do it, you have to do it like Paul Ellering. Not Paul Ellering, Paul Dangerously. hell? Why can't I get this right? Barack Obama. Paul Heyman. That's it. Brock Lesnar is manager in wrestling. Paul Heyman. I blanked out on that for a moment. But yeah,
you
want to
know another crazy thing about him? I got another one for you about Mr. Rooney. Before Tagliabue got selected as the commissioner of the league, there was rumors going around that Dan Rooney was going to be the commissioner before Tagliabue. How about that one?
I could top that. I heard Dan Snyder almost signed him. Dan Snyder for the Redskins almost traded for him. Then he found out that he would actually be the owner, and he was like, screw that.
That's bad.
Well, listen, Steve, do you have any Dan Rooney info, any nuggets?
Well, no, I didn't know much about him except for, you know, the Rooney Rule named after him. But I did think – I thought I saw Football Life on the NFL Network, and they had a show on him, and I remember it was pretty good. That's how I knew – I knew, actually, he was the ambassador because they had that on that show. But yeah, it's kind of sad, but all good things must come to an end, right?
Yes, sir.
And 84 is, you know, living large.
I would have to put him up there as one of those pillar faces or whatever, as you would say, as like a Mount Rushmore type of owner for any organization. Just the Rooneys in general. Great family. They said Rooney Rule. There wouldn't be one around if it wouldn't have been for them. And look, you know, the family shall live on. Art Rooney, the son, he's just going to take the step from his father and just carry it on. Great tradition. They run their team right.
Yeah, there's no secret why the Steelers have been in the picture basically since the 70s. You know, I mean, every team has their down years, but basically, they've been, you know, tops in their division or tops in the NFL since the mid-70s. So he must have been doing something right.
Yeah.
I think next to the
like
Patriots,
said,
they have the titles, right?
Yeah. And it comes down to they ran their organization as kind of like how DeBartolo did with the 49ers. It's more of a family-oriented thing where they, you know, not the guys weren't considered as you know, pieces or meat or however people would consider, you know, oh, you're just my employee. He went and actually spent time with guys, talked with them, got to meet them, be personal with them, met with their families. I mean, these guys aren't like your Jerry Joneses where they're involved in it that way. These were on a personal, better level, I would say. More human. There was more human and family element to it with this guy and their family.
Yeah, it's kind of like Bob Kraft is the way he's running the Patriots right now. It's like you said, it's a family. I mean, all the way from the top to the bottom. I mean, the coaches, the general managers, the ball boys probably, you know, have talked to him or gone to dinner with him or something. Yeah, it's the way you run an organization, which is like completely the other way, the opposite of the other icon in Al Davis, where, you know, I heard he was kind of a jerk, but whatever works for you.
Well, and there's Ted Thompson. If the Packers are a family, it's filled with like all young kids and foster kids, and they're only like homegrown, and then he kicks them out of the house, and that's it. You never see him again. What? You're 18? Get out. Now, I do have to say that there's no relation to Ed Rooney from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the principal. Rooney, I want you to get out here right now. I want to give you a piece of my mind. And then Ferris smacks his butt.
Was it Mara Rooney? Is that her name?
Ooh, you're really pulling one out
there. The actress? Yeah, well, her... yeah, because doesn't he have, like, some kind of connection to the Giants, too, or something? Oh, no, it's... I can't think of it now. Move on.
All right, we shall. Because the next story is that Marshawn Lynch and the Oakland Raiders have been negotiating. Ah, that line from the old NBA Jam game is coming to mind. He's heating up. What do you think about Lynch? And if he does come back, let's start with you, Tom.
Well, it could be a 1 to 2 year type of, you know, contract type of deal with him. And the offensive line is solid there. So if they weren't going to get a deal done with Marshawn Lynch, everybody in their world would have loved to see like a Leonard Fournette type of situation where he'd move up into the Raiders scenario and you'd have an Ezekiel Elliott type of setup from the year before this year as well. But with Marshawn there, as we mentioned before, who knows if he's been working out, not working out, whatever. It is a year off from football. You're not taking those hits. They do have two young, fresh young bodies on the team behind them. So if he does go over there, I think they'll be able to spell him when they need to, but that just opens up that passing game. These guys, with Jared Cook there now, you got Crabtree, and you got Amari Cooper. Lynch is just going to draw another guy down in the box when he's in the game, and it's just going to be field days for those receivers. So whatever Carr put up this last year, you could almost see him, you know, putting up an exponential amount of number ahead of what he just did.
Steve, what do you think?
Whoever's got that Carr, yeah, I was going to say, whoever's got Carr as a quarterback is definitely in for a treat.
I think that's you.
Oh, it is. You're right.
So you think he's going to be the linchpin? Pun intended there.
I think, definitely, you know, look at the difference with the Seahawks and Russell Wilson's passing numbers without Lynch there. I think he definitely is a guy, like you said, you have to bring another guy down the box to account for him, and Carr's got the weapons around him. As long as he doesn't break his leg before the playoffs, they should be right there again.
I honestly don't think he's going to be what he used to be. I just can't imagine that he has stayed in the kind of shape that he used to be in. That's kind of all I think about is at his last year, due to the heavy carries and the heavy pounding, the style that he has as a runner, he's a great player. But he started to show wear and tear. He started to break down that last season, and I had him. I had him his final season. I'm afraid that that's more of what we're going to see. But if he did stay in shape, Tom and I talked about this the other day on an episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. If he stayed in shape, I think that he definitely is going to put up some good numbers. But, guys, let's move over, unless anybody else has another word on that. Do you guys have any that you'd like to share? Steve, why don't you kick it off?
Well, I see that the Detroit Lions are going to make every Sunday a Thursday now. You see their new uniforms?
Yeah. No. Did they unveil something hideous?
It looks like they're the uniforms that the teams are forced to wear on Thursday night, the kind of the color, bright color scheme.
Yeah, it's the color blitz.
Yeah.
1 hour ago. Oh, no! What the hell?
Not good.
What
not
the
good
hell is that? What is that, like charcoal gray? Because they keep getting burnt?
Battleship gray. Or is
wow,
that, is
Honolulu
that pewter.
Blue. Is it pewter? Putrid. All right, let's move away from this topic. Tom, do you have one as well?
Yeah, I guess it would have to be that who is and who isn't going to be at this for the rookies this year. I mean, ability to number one overall guy not even being there to walk across the stage to hands with the commissioner.
I think he's talking about the big hug with Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
Hug him. Maybe they'll have like a hug protest.
There's a news saying that the number one overall consensus pick Garrett is staying home and having a party.
Writing
his...
poetry. He's going to stay home and write some, what is that Japanese poem again? A haiku?
Haiku?
Stay home and write a haiku instead of going to the NFL draft.
Well, the funny thing about him is he's at...
Something tells me that his type of poetry is more the limerick type that starts with a guy from Nantucket, but I don't know.
Tom, your phone keeps fading, just so you know. That's why we're cutting in.
I quit.
You,
can you hear me?
You quit.
Well, before you quit, just
what the hell? The
hey,
whole
at
world
least you
that.
At
Somebody
least
just drove off the road. Andy Wellman driving to work right now just about flew off the freeway hearing that you quit. Don't do
hey,
that.
You heard me at least say that.
Well, before you quit, though, trade me Johnson and Julio.
Yes, trying to get one more in. That's great. Spoken like a true dynasty owner. Well, I actually have a couple of things that I didn't want to dominate the news section, but I just saw that, within the past 20 minutes, 30 minutes or so, Trey Wingo is reporting that Lions president, well, actually, Adam Schefter, Trey Wingo retweeted it, but Adam Schefter reported that Lions president Rod Wood,
that's a porn name if I ever heard one.
Tonight, he expects the NFL regular season to be released next Thursday. That would put it Thursday the 20th. And don't they usually do like a big show for that? Have they begun doing that on NFL Network, guys?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
And then
so,
they go through and try and predict who's going to win what games. Which
that,
is a total farce because you go back and they're not consistent. They're just paid talking mouths.
I need something to talk about in the off season. I don't mind the
wait a minute.
Unveiling.
So,
the
I think I just described
us. But news that might be maybe a little something the Packers pay attention to. I doubt it, but the Tennessee Titans are going to part ways with longtime cornerback Jason McCourty. McCourty is their, according to the article from ESPN, Paul Karski. Sounds like something from Steve Martin. And the man with two brains, Dr. Fahar. The most senior homegrown player on the Titans is being released. They drafted him in the sixth round back in 2009. And dare I say that the Green Bay Packers could use a cornerback? Anybody?
Well,
I don't see this one happening.
No, Ted Thompson's just not going to do it. I mean,
he already signed one quarter this year. What are you guys talking about? Oh, it happened to be
yeah,
when he
the
drafted,
guy who
but...
used to be in his yeah. I don't see him bringing in a guy like this. That and he's coming for a system that he would have to relearn a whole new scheme. And I don't think this guy's a fit for our team.
And if you recall, House was actually on our team at one time. I think we drafted him, actually. So
he
still fits the Thompson mold.
I actually think Devon House is going to do just fine this year. And his statistics down in Jacksonville, it's really a bit of a mystery. It was kind of an issue with the coaching staff as to why he got benched. But statistically, he was playing very well. So, it's a bit of a mystery as to what happened down there. I'm glad we got him back.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to be hurting that bad. I mean, Collins is going to be a year older and hopefully a year wiser. And I can't remember what the other guy's name is.
One more bit.
I got a brain
news.
Freeze tonight, but I think we're okay at cornerback for now. I don't think that he's going to jump out and get that. He needs to address linebackers before he addresses cornerback. So.
Well, I'm afraid he's going to draft some young
cornerback
that's not ready.
Okay, here's what I'd love to see happen. I know Ted's never going to do this, but I'd love to see the guy make a splash. You want to get a missile? Go trade up and get yourself a Reuben Foster. I'd love to see them do that.
I'm really chilled on that guy.
Unless you want to sit back and pick up our – what is his name? Davis out of Florida, because there's rumors he might be down around that area by us. I'm sold on Foster. I think this guy would be stud. And then you can leave Clay on the outside, do whatever he wants to do out there. And
just today I was listening to ESPN First Draft, which I highly recommend anybody who's serious about Dynasty rookie drafts. Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, very informative, and they were talking about Foster just today, and I think it was McShay that said there are deep concerns. I already talked about it back, just me, a regular guy off the street, talked about it when he couldn't make it through the frickin' physical at the combine without getting into a fight with the medical doctor because he was pissed he had to wait. I mean, this is akin to what we've talked about in the past with guys like, I think it's Randy Gregory and Shane Ray, when they couldn't stop smoking pot long enough to get their blood test through the combine when they know it's coming. This guy can't get through a simple appointment and he gets kicked out of the combine? When's the last time a player got kicked out of the combine? I mean, that's when it started to scare me a little bit. And McShay said that scouts that have watched this guy for the past year, there's basically warnings out there that this guy is hanging out with a group of people that are really bad influences on him, and they're worried about what's going to happen if they give him a boatload of money. And there's even talk that he might not be the first linebacker off the board because of it. Hassan Reddick from Temple is rising. Cunningham from Vanderbilt, he's a guy that a lot of people have talked about as far as linebackers. I'm just throwing it out there, what I've heard as recently as today, that kind of backs up what all of us have seen. Again, I'd ask you both, when's the last time you heard of a player getting kicked out of the combine?
Yeah, it takes a special kind of stupid to do that, but, you know, he's an athlete, so he'll find a home somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, look, Joe Mixon didn't even get invited to go, and he's been rumbled to possibly come into the Packers organization with their first-round pick if they stay there. I heard, and I've been hearing a lot of rumors on different Twitter feeds and things, that he didn't think the report that they gave him on his shoulder was the right report as far as injury-wise, and he was spouting off about that, saying, no, his shoulder was fine, legit, and it came down to like almost like a physical thing, you know, where they were saying you didn't pass your physical. Like if there was a free agent and we brought him in, like the Eagle Ferguson, the defensive lineman that we had in for one day at the Packers, gave him a physical, and then he failed it. They were like, well, we're releasing you. It's sort of a similar scenario as that, and this kid's future is hanging in the balance of, all right, well, some trainer dude's telling me I'm not going to be able to do my stuff, and I spent my entire career life trying to build up to this moment, and I have all of the eyes of the league here right now. And he's, you know, of course he got caught up in the heat of the moment, and he went nuts. But hearing is it was because he was getting called out on his shoulder that he had an injury on.
Well, I've said before how I would have handled it. I would have had him do an interview and say, hey, listen, man, they asked me to cough. Okay, I did that once. All right, fine, you asked me to cough a second time. The third time, you're playing with it, dude. Get off me, back away. That's how I would have handled it. But
if anybody would have touched down on you for three times in a row, you wouldn't have said a thing. You just smiled.
I think you would have been in Vegas already married.
My eldest.
Honeymoon suite, bro.
Honeymoon in Vegas,
but,
yes.
But this,
well, listen,
but this
I got one more item.
Hey,
I got one more item, guys.
Hit
it, Tom.
Yeah, they've got one more thing. This goes back to the same thing with Mixon. His incident happened in 2014, right? Dude then gets suspended for the entire year. Coach Stoops said, you know what? I'm suspending you for a year. That was his first in college there when that scenario happened. Yeah, I'm not condoning a dude punching a girl in the face. I mean, we've seen Snoopy get popped.
The thing with Mixon, though, is so long ago, the difference between Mixon and Foster is that Foster just did this. And he knew he was at the combine. He knew he needed to be on his best behavior. Mixon's episode happened years ago, and there's no evidence that there's been anything since then. So you're talking about giving a guy who potentially cleaned up his act a second chance. He's not Lawrence Phillips, who is just a thug right to the end. he's seemingly a guy who's cleaned up his act, and he's got this little scar on his record, whereas Foster, man, you know, nobody questions his ability in his play. It's just, I get worried when I see a guy that can't hold it down. I know, Tom, it's a tough argument to argue. Yeah. It's all
right,
dude.
Right, you had your Ray Rice scenario that just happened, and then you had your Adrian Peterson thing happen. So it was fresh in the news, and things happened in the NFL, and this also then happened in the college level. So, I mean, it was a big thing that was going on, you know, guys attacking women. So,
just for the record, that chick looked like a dude. Moving on. Just kidding. I had an awesome trivia question to share from Fantasy Football Index today. Fantasy Index, again, has a free email. I say again because I talk about this from time to time, a free email newsletter that you can sign up for. I don't get anything out of this, people, but other than the enjoyment of sharing cool things for fantasy football, including this trivia. The question today, which ties right into news before we move on, who is the only player who has caught passes from 5 different quarterbacks selected number 1 overall? And the hint is he played his college ball at Florida and caught his last NFL pass in 2015. So again, this is a guy who caught passes from 5 different quarterbacks that were selected number 1 overall. Now, I don't know if you guys looked at the answer or not, but my first thought right away, I started thinking about, well, geez, what teams had number one quarterbacks taken number one overall? And I thought of Oakland. I thought of Jamarcus Russell, because it's also got to be a guy that bounced from team to team. So some of these guys maybe didn't pan out. I thought a little bit about Carolina, and I thought about whether Eli Manning would have played in the mix, Tampa Bay. So I hit some of the teams that were involved here. Did either of you guys know this or no?
I didn't know it until...
until I looked at it. I thought it would have been like Vincent Jackson or something like that, but I was surprised at the answer.
Yeah, it was Lewis Murphy, everybody. Lewis Murphy caught passes from Jamarcus Russell, Carson Palmer, Cam Newton, Eli Manning, and Jameis Winston. And Murphy suffered an ACL injury in 2015 that put him on injured reserve, and he hasn't been back since. He's going to be 30 next month, and the tie-in to the NFL news is he was arrested at an airport in Tampa yesterday for carrying a concealed weapon. Wonder if they found that during the pat-down. But you guys got any cool newsletter stuff that you belong to, things like this that you'd like to share with the audience? Tom?
The only thing I get is whatever I receive from my Twitter feeds from any of the people that I follow. So, and I kind of guess we hit on the old Twitter feed and that the other day in the podcast. So you hit one Fantasyland person up, a bazillion other ones are right there on the right as recommended ones to go look to. So, but you got to be careful on who you're picking to actually follow. There is a bunch of garbage stuff out there too.
Steve, how about you? Anything you'd like to share with the audience? Different newsletters or stuff like that, feeds?
No, I mean, I get my stuff basically through NFL.com and watching the NFL channel.
Okay, well, if you read the title of today's podcast, you still there, guys?
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, yeah.
Okay, just making sure I didn't accidentally cut you guys off when I muted the phone to cough. If anybody's read the title of today's podcast, it's no mystery what we're about to shift to. Today's theme is pivot players, and I must first shamelessly credit Chris Harris from the Harris Football Podcast for this idea. I told you guys the other day that Chris Harris' show is awesome. It's pretty cool, and I was listening to it when he proceeded to tell how every year when he worked at ESPN, they would tell him in like January, all right, let's start talking about next year. And he's like, well, there's nothing to talk about. I don't know where anybody's gone in free agency. The draft hasn't happened. What do you want me to talk about? So what he came up with was these he did these lists of players that were kind of pivotal to fantasy success for the coming year, because you kind of know the cast of characters that are out there right now, so you can look at guys and say, well, that guy has the capacity to, you know, play really, really well and carry a team, or he equally could just flop and completely kill it. You know, C.J. Anderson is a guy from last year that had that, and the year before even, where if he takes off and plays like he does in the late second half of a season, he could carry a team, and thus guys draft him, you know, in the second, third round as a result. And then if he flops, well, that really is going to hurt you. So the idea is that we'll talk about pivot players from 2017, players that could be pivot points for fantasy teams, especially in Mad Dog. Guys, once we're done going through some names that we have, I'd like to go through each roster in Mad Dog and take turns pointing out some of the players from each team that are pivot players. But first, Steve, why don't we start with you? Who is a pivot player, generically speaking, in the NFL for 2017? We're talking about a guy who has the capacity to make or break someone's team.
Well, the first one that comes to mind is Le'Veon Bell. You know, if he can not get suspended, you know, he definitely can carry teams. And David Johnson and Julio Jones, those are pivot players that would be really good on my roster. But, you know, it's kind of fun with Mad Dog, though, and some other leagues. When you start bringing in individual defensive players, people tend to forget the kind of impact that those guys can have. Guys like J.J. Watt and Landon Collins, you know, if they continue to, you know, Watt comes back and or Collins continues to put up the numbers that he keeps putting up, those are guys that can definitely help carry your team from a different perspective, the defensive side of the ball.
Completely agree. Did you have a particular player or two in mind you'd like to toss out there?
Yeah, I think I just did.
No, I mean some more? Or do you want to turn it over to Tom for more commentary?
No,
I'm trying to manage the back and forth, or do you guys just want to jump back and forth in it?
I have no problems cutting off Tom at any time, so.
All right, free for all it is. Tom, jump in.
I was going to mention J.J. Watt coming back off from the back surgery. Another guy, just so happens he's on your team again, Rashad Jones. Two guys that are like top tier one, two, or three in their own rightful position and both go out with injuries for the year. How are they going to come back from those injuries? And are they going to be able to be the same impactful players that they once were? That's what I got for those guys.
Well, one of my top pivot players is Todd Gurley. And I'm not just bringing him up because he's on my dynasty team. I think you genuinely look at Todd Gurley 2 years ago, and he was on fire. Everybody wished they had him. And he was this rookie that was just really strong, looking really good, running the ball, scoring some touchdowns, breaking some nice runs. And then what the hell happened last year? It was like a whole different player. And granted, the Rams were terrible. They're going to be bad again this year. Their offensive line was rough. To me, that's a pivot player right there. If you get the Todd Gurley from 2 years ago, then he's worthy of a late first, you know, to second round pick. If you get the Todd Gurley from last year, I don't think that's worth, you know, a 10th round pick. What do you guys think about Gurley?
Well, you always got to respect his potential, you know, so I think he's always worth something. You hope that he's not going to be stuck in the production mode that he's been in last year, but you know, for me, the real trick is finding the guys that nobody's expecting. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, if you would have had Barry Church on your team, for instance, a guy that just goes crazy. Like, I have a guy on my team, Byron Jones. I'm just waiting for that guy. I know he can be really big. I know he can be really big for my defense. And I'm just waiting for him to step up and carry my defense forward.
Well,
I think another guy
is,
go ahead, Dom.
Well, my thing on Gurley is without having that offensive line, not having a true number one receiver, with losing the receiver they just had, and he signs with another team, and you got to deal with basically a rookie quarterback there, it's all hands on deck to go after Gurley. There's nobody really else that's threatening you on that team. Till something happens as far as their passing game or the offensive line is improved, I think he might be in that rut where, you know, I mean, he's going to put up, you know, your 1,000-yard season, maybe 4 to 6 touchdowns, 30, 40 catches, and about 500-600 yards. But who else did the same thing when he was with St. Louis when they were in St. Louis? Steven Jackson. It just was stuck as a product of what the environment was around him. He just couldn't get around it, you know?
I'm trying to click on Gurley's name to tell you the – and I finally got it here. So in 2015 – where in the hell – what the hell kind of site is this, man? Damn it. Show me some numbers. Here we go. 1,106 yards rushing. 1,106 yards rushing in 2015. 10 touchdowns. In 2016, that drops to 845 yards rushing and 6 touchdowns. And, oh, by the way, he had 35 more carries. I mean, what the hell? I mean, yikes. It just was – the big point that I'm making with Gurley is just that, which Gurley do you – you know, it's like that Seinfeld episode where the girl, every time he sees her in a different light, he's like, yeah, oh, it's Gurley. Geez, is he going to be good Gurley or bad Gurley? That will make or break teams. Another player that I want to throw out there, guys, is Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson, I was convinced last year, was ready for superstardom, and everything went to hell. I mean, we've got a new regime down there in Jacksonville. Does Blake Bortles show up ready to play? In 2015, Allen Robinson had 80 catches for 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns. Now, granted, Jacksonville played a lot of catch-up ball. A lot of people talked about that to be cautious going into 2016, but you didn't expect the guy to turn into 68 receptions for 801 yards and 6 touchdowns. It was pathetic. Now, there's a guy, though, the talent, to what Steve was talking about, the talent is there. So does Allen Robinson bounce back? I think he's a pivot player. He's the kind of guy that if you pick him up, he can carry you. But you're going to have to pay second, third, fourth round value on that, which means if he busts, you're screwed. You missed out on a better player. What about you guys?
Well, I was going to give Tom the opportunity to go first, but... Well, yeah, and then you have to also look at what the situation. I mean, Robinson's numbers went down, but was it Marquise Lee became more involved in the offense? So it got spread around a little bit more. You know, Jacksonville didn't do all that much better this year than they did last year. You know, you can almost say that the players kind of quit on but other people began getting more involved. I mean, Alan Hearns, he was doing well until he got hurt. He was taking away targets from Robinson. So, you know, if you want to talk about a really neat scenario now, you take Brandon Cooks, who was in that wide-open offense in New Orleans. Well, now he's going to be the probably the premier pass catcher in the Patriots. Now, there's a guy that you might want to go out and get. He could be a pivotal player because, well, he has this guy, I don't know if you heard of him, his name's Tom Brady. He's throwing him the ball now, and he's going to be their main wide receiver. You know, you could look to pick him up with good value.
What's his name again? I just think I saw some of his jerseys for sale when I was in Mexico. Well, I'm going to throw out a few more names, guys, because I'm totally sold on this topic myself. I hope it's not dry for you guys or anybody else, but Michael Thomas of the Saints. Cooks has been traded, which opens the door for Thomas. He sure looked good last year. Man, can he keep that up with Breeze, or does Cooks out of the equation, does that hurt? I mean, he had 107 targets last year, 981 yards and 8 touchdowns. Another guy I want to bring up, Tyler Eifert. Eifert was a touchdown machine. You know, touchdowns are something that really fluctuates from year to year, but he also was a key component in the Bengals' passing attack. And if he's healthy and he plays, he's another one of those guys that could make or break a team, as is DeAndre Hopkins, depending upon who his quarterback's going to be. But Sammy Watkins is another guy I want to bring up. Watkins and his talent is incredible. That's a guy that he could make your team. He could help make your season a championship season. Or, again, these are guys that you have to spend some draft capital to get. They could also break your season in a redraft league, we're speaking. You guys have some more you'd like to throw out?
Yeah, Keenan Allen. What's he going to be like coming after that injury? How about Kevin White with the defection of Alshon Jeffrey to Philadelphia? How does that help or hurt like a Jordan Matthews or... Yeah, like you said, Terrell Pryor with a new scene in from Cleveland into Washington. I mean, Pierre Garçon in San Francisco now. I mean, the wide receivers, it's pretty sick on what's going to happen at these places, because there's been so much turnaround on teams with guys flip-flopping. Is Kelvin Benjamin all of a sudden going to turn into a super stud because there's really nobody else there except for Fungus, Devin Fungus, you know?
that
if you really want to, if you really want to roll the dice and take a chance, who do you ride, Golden Tate or Marvin Jones? I mean, Stafford puts up a bazillion yards every year, and it always seems to go to more to one receiver. Which one is it going to be this year?
I think Tate continues to be the main guy.
Same thing happened in the Giants with Brandon Marshall going there. I mean, does that infect the production numbers of Odell Beckham, or does it just hurt Sterling Shepard's numbers? You know, somebody's taking a hit with those numbers, with them taking Brandon Marshall too. So, I mean, there are a lot of situations that have happened with this offseason already with free agency that are serious impacts, you know.
Well, Martavis Bryant is another one coming back a year, 1 year suspension, and now he's going to come back to Pittsburgh. And if he can snap back into what he was before he got suspended, that's another player that somebody could get a hold of and it could really carry him.
I mean, you got Ted Ginn Jr. to supposedly take over the role of what Brandon Cooks just released in New Orleans. I mean, you know, there are a lot of pieces out there that have moved around. I mean, is Jay Ajayi going to be what he was last year, or was that just a fluke?
I think she brought up. That's correct.
I mean,
Steve,
was that a one-year hit?
Well, I personally think it might be. I don't think coming out of the draft, I just don't think he is body-wise able to handle the every down carry type running back duties. I just think he's going to have to be sprinkled in as part of a running back by committee to be successful. They have to manage his carries. But I'd like to ask Steve about Melvin Gordon. I believe you traded him to Andy, right, this past – or did
no,
Andy trade him?
He got him. Yeah, he got him from Andy.
He traded it to you for Dak Prescott, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so yes. Melvin Gordon is another one of those guys where he's going to go early. I've already heard him bantied about as one of the top 4 or 5 running backs in this year's class in a redraft. if you get Gordon rolling and he gets a lot of carries and he gets a lot of catches out of the backfield, man, that could be a centerpiece on a team that wins a title. But if you take him and he actually kind of goes back like he was 2 years ago, or the line isn't playing very well, it could get ugly. So what do you think about Gordon as a pivot player?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I went out and got him. I mean, he obviously exploded in the beginning of the year and then, you know, got hurt. But in a league like ours where you're looking for any four offensive players, so, you know, I could start four wide receivers instead of starting a running back, you really got to look for that gem if you're gonna use a running back. So, yeah, I guess he's probably one of the pivot players on my team. I'm hoping that he does well.
Tom, I want to ask you about Danny Woodhead, who's a guy that got signed by the Ravens. And the young guy that they picked up last year is a Dixon, got suspended already. Woodhead is just one of those guys that, going all the way back to the Patriots, just keeps doing well. Just keeps, I mean, frankly, going back to the Jets when he was a rookie, he just always is there. He's always giving you good, positive numbers. Woodhead is a guy that I'd love to hear you comment on.
I understand why Andy dropped him off his team for money purposes. His salary was going to be very high to keep him. But him going to Baltimore, that's one of the best things I've ever seen happen for that team. He's going to be Joe Flacco's best freaking friend, man. Those guys, all they got to do is find one receiver and, you know, somebody to replace that Steve Smith or be that Anquan Boldin type guy, and that could be something else there. That could be special. He's always been that sidekick of the quarterback, you know, like you said, all the way back from the Jets to New England to San Diego and now Baltimore. It could be incredible. When he's there, he's putting up solid numbers week in and week out, legitimate numbers, and he ain't considered like a top 10 guy, but he was putting up top 10 guy numbers till he got hurt.
Jordan Howard is another guy that, you know, with the 1 year under his belt playing for Foxy, the quarterback situation there, they picked up the guy from Tampa Bay. Help me out, guys. Suddenly I'm blanking.
That's Mike Glennon.
Yeah, Glennon. They picked up Glennon. Rumor is that they might pick up a guy in the draft that with the third overall pick, that there's a lot of strong rumors that Chicago may pick up like Mitch Trubisky or something. But that could be an interesting situation if teams can just, you know, if they don't have much of a passing game, having lost Alston Jeffrey, and if Kevin White can't get healthy, they're going to have Meredith out there. And I believe they signed, who's the tight end, Luke Wilson? Is that right? They signed Luke Wilson and Deion Sims. But
they
may not be able to pass the ball a
lot. Yeah, they just picked up Marcus Wheaton, too, a receiver that used to be playing with Pittsburgh. So the receiving core there is very, very depleted. Plus, having a quarterback who hasn't really started in the last 2 years, I think it's going to – I mean, they've been working on their offensive line, which is good. So it may still be enough to help Howard get the yards. I think I'm going to see his numbers scale back a little bit. He's going to be expected to, like, you know, be like that 30 to 42% type guy, you know, all the offense going through him kind of thing. Because he was catching balls out of the backfield. Good runner. Like I said, second overall rushing yards only behind Ezekiel Elliott last year. So, I don't know. With the quarterback problem and the no receivers, it could hurt him.
And, Steve, I'm going to ask you one more. This is a guy that you drafted, Eddie Lacy. If Eddie Lacy gets into Seattle, can he almost play kind of a poor man's Marshawn Lynch, another pivot player?
Well, I always thought that he was like Marshawn Lynch. I thought the Green Bay Packers used him terribly. He's not an edge guy. He's a guy you give the ball, stuff it up the middle, and he punishes defensive guys until they don't want to tackle him anymore. So if he can get his weight under control and stay healthy, yeah, he's got the potential to do exactly what Marshawn Lynch did. I don't see why he wouldn't.
That's what makes him
but again,
clear, though. You know, is can he stay healthy and get his weight in check and actually be there when the team needs him? Because I think as a guy who watches all the Packer games, and you guys do a lot too, he wasn't always there when the Packers needed him.
Hey, did any of you guys get up to Depeer this last weekend to hit up his rummage?
No.
No.
I was busy over at Craig Nall's house.
I got in a fight with a guy over a pair of pants that I wanted to buy of his, you know, Fat Eddie pants.
Were they Husky? Husky jeans?
Oh, they were Husky. They were Husky.
But, you know, that brings up another issue, you know, when you talk about pivotal players and the situation they're in, are they going to be used properly or correctly? Because my biggest take on the whole Eddie Lacy situation in Green Bay was, you know, in his rookie year, they gave him the ball and they pounded and they pounded and they pounded and he had a great season, you know, rookie of the year season. And then it just seemed like he'd be in there for four or five plays, and then Starks would be in there for four or five plays, and then he'd put him in there four or five plays. Then it got it to whether he was in there, and then Montgomery was in there. And it's just like, you know, there's certain backs or there's certain players that just need to be fed all the time. I mean, that's why Ezekiel Elliott did what he did. I mean, you know, you could count on one hand how many series another running back came in for the Cowboys. So is that what Seattle's going to do? And the reason I don't put him as a pivotal player is because I'm not really expecting a whole lot out of him because they have Rawls and Procise, which tells me that he's going to get probably rested a lot more than I'd like to see.
I got one pivotal guy for you guys, and I'd like to hear you guys put input on this guy. With him losing his offensive coordinator, now going to be the coach of the 49ers, what do you think the stat line, or how do you think that will affect the Matt Ryan that we just saw this last year? Do you think he's going to come back down to earth to like a 300-point type quarterback, whereas this year he was that 450 quarterback?
Well, better yet, look at what about the guys in the backfield, Devontae Freeman? Is he going to be able to do what he did last year?
Yep.
You know,
exactly. How does it affect?
I definitely think
offense,
Freeman will.
I mean,
Freeman, well, because of the head coach, and this is where I come in on Ryan, and I said this from the day that they hired the guy. What's the Dan?
Quinn.
That I blank on names. Yeah, Dan Quinn. You get these defensive-minded coaches. I'm not worried about the running backs. They'll get their carries. I am worried about the fact that Matt Ryan was a top eight quarterback every single year from the year that he came into the league. And then all of a sudden Quinn comes in his first year, it turns into absolute crap. He has like his worst statistical career ever. He can't get the ball in the end zone. And then last year they catch lightning in a bottle and he's whipping the ball all over the field. Now the offensive coordinator is gone. Does the, especially coming off the way they lost that Super Bowl, does the head coach double down on his tendencies, which is to run the ball, play solid defense, more Seattle Seahawks kind of football? Does he move to more of a game plan like Ron Rivera does in Carolina, in which case you're going to have some great games naturally because he's a great player? I think it's more the script and the type of offense they run, which is kind of what Steve was alluding to with some of these players. How are they used? I have a real fear that Atlanta is going to kind of go in a bit of a shell and that they're not going to be kind of gunslingers like they were last year, taking the league by storm.
Yeah, and I also wonder what the effects are going to be in San Francisco now that you've got a Brian Hoyer going to be your quarterback. And what does that have an effect on Carlos Hyde? Does his numbers go up? Is he going to be used differently now in that Shanahan system that he runs?
Hyde's going to be in a contract year, if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't look that up before. I think that's true. That would be the reason why I would think that maybe Hyde would light things up. Other than that, San Francisco is still going to be a horrible team, and Pierre Garçon is their best wide receiver. He'll get a lot of targets. He's going to be undervalued when it comes time to acquire players, but I still don't think Hyde's got a lot to work with. I think the best thing that you have going in his favor is the fact that he's going to be hungry for a good contract, so he's going to give you everything he's got. But speaking of contracts, Cousins from Washington. That's another situation where you've ripped away the offensive coordinator. You've ripped away his number one and number two wide receivers. He's going to have a rookie wide receiver in Dotson out there on the field, and he's going to have a new guy in Pryor who's only had one like good half a season of play with Cleveland. What happens to him? Is that just too much shakeup? The running back's all messed up. That's a pivot player right there, as I think is Tyrod Taylor.
I agree.
Well, I don't know about Tyrod Taylor because I don't think I'd ever hope for him to make a big impact on my team. He's the quarterback you start because you beefed up everywhere else on your roster and you couldn't afford to keep him. As far as Kirk Cousins go, I mean, and don't forget, though, Jamison Crowder really emerged last year. So it's not like he had nothing to work with. And I believe Reed's still there, isn't he? So I don't think it's going to be as bad as some people make out. Now, they definitely need to get their running back situation in order. But, you know, it's tough for me to count a quarterback as a pivot player because – you're always counting on your quarterback to do well. And you know the ones that do well and the ones that don't. I mean, you got your occasional Blake Bortles who blows up one year and then disappears. But if you're pinning your hopes on a quarterback, you pretty much know what he's going to do year in and year out.
Yeah, but you look at guys like Bortles is one that you just mentioned. Do you get good Bortles or bad Bortles? If you pick up Bortles in the late rounds this year and he turns into the Bortles that he was 2 years ago, you got a steal. And that's going to carry you and your team and give you trade maneuverability. Whereas, you know, you can pick a Tom Brady, you're going to pay for it, and he's going to be consistent. You know what you're getting there. You really don't know what you're getting with Blake Bortles, which is kind of where the pivot players come to play.
But Blake Bortles is not going to be drafted at anybody's team as a starting quarterback unless you're playing in a 16-team league. And even then, he might not even be picked as a starter. So, yeah, is it nice to have a guy like that, you know, step up and become more valuable than the value you give him at draft time or at your dynasty league, your contract time or whatever? Sure. But I would never say to myself, wow, if Blake Bortles does well this year, then my team's going to do well this year. And that's what I kind of get when you talk about – that's what my idea of a pivot player is that you're looking for a player to step up and have a good year, and then he's going to be the one that helps carry your team.
Blake
Bortles.
What about Rob Gronkowski?
Let me throw this out there quick. Gronkowski is a guy, but I want to say – Bortles in 2015, 4,428 yards passing and 35 touchdowns through the air. So that is a guy that if you get him on your team and is going to put up numbers like Tom Brady, you just think of if you picked up a successful guy to be your starter and now all of a sudden you can go ahead and trade that guy and keep Bortles as your starter, that's definitely a game changer for you. It doesn't matter if you planned on it. There's a lot of guys that all of us pick every year that we didn't necessarily bank on being that guy in the driver's seat. But you do kind of hope, best case scenario, that it'll go that way. And if it does, that's where it carries you. And I think Eli Manning's that guy too this year with the addition of Brandon Marshall. And you've got Sterling Shepard and you've got Beckham Jr. Man, that could turn into some major, major raining down of touchdowns. Or
right.
You could take him expecting that. You don't take a very good backup because and next thing you know, you're completely screwed at quarterback.
Well, I mean, if anybody out there wants to pin their hopes on Blake Bortles doing well, you know, you got to have mercy on your soul.
I don't know if it's pinning your hopes on it. It's about taking him as your number two, or if you're going to do a quarterback by committee and having the guy hit, and all of a sudden you've got a top five starter, that's a pivot. That's pivotal to your season. All of a sudden your quarterback goes from being one of the worst in the league to your quarterback situation being one of the best in the league, and your team's going to, you know, win as a result.
But well, Tom,
I know what you're getting at.
Go ahead. Oh, okay.
Well, no, take the last word.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, when I think of pivot players, you're thinking of guys like, what the hell is his name? Dez Bryant. You know, that's a guy that you're saying to yourself, okay, this guy can put up numbers. And if I got him on my roster and he does well this year, he can carry my team. Nobody thinks of Cole Beasley as a pivot player, but if he blows up like he did, well then yeah, it's a great find, but I don't classify him as a pivot player. Okay,
but I don't think
Bryant
doesn't fit that classification as much as Jordy Nelson last year does. Jordy Nelson, Bryant is a guy who you know is going to be solid, and you know you're going to get some good mileage out of him. But even if you get best Bryant, well, A, you've already paid a price to get him on your team, and B, how much better can he get? He's steady year in and year out. You know, last year, Nelson coming off the injury, people didn't know what to expect of him, and he was going at the end of the second into the third round at times or more or worse. That was a player that ended up leading the league in touchdowns. That was a pivot player last year. If you took him, you ended up getting him way above what his actual ADP was. The value of having him went way higher. But, Tom, why don't you get some words on edgewise?
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say, Luke Gronkowski's missed a lot of games through the years, and missing most, if not basically the last 7-8 games of the season, counting playoffs for the Patriots. Do we know what we're going to get anymore? Is this guy ever going to be able to run a whole season? I mean, if he's there, I mean, he sets the tight end bar. I mean, there's him, and then it's a big, huge drop-off. If this guy's in there, he's pivotal for whoever owns him. And the owner who has him, I mean, should be selling him as soon as they can when he's having a season. You know what I mean?
Get what
you can for him. If you can find somebody who's willing to buy on him, I mean, this last year, I would have sold him this year. But for the owner who has him, he has said over and over again he needs to get more offense on his team. Well, get more offense by getting rid of a piece that's only there on your team for a portion of a season, you know?
Well, guys, we got probably 11 minutes left, at least until we hit that 15-minute over mark. So why don't we slide in, if you're okay, to the Mad Dog and actually talk a little bit. We'll keep this going, but we'll get a little bit team-specific. Name a player or two, maybe one on offense, one on defense, for each team that you think is a pivot player for that team. And I'd like to start from the bottom up with you're in trouble. If you go look at the roster page, he's all the way at the bottom. I think you're in trouble. I will say pivot player on offense is going to be, Sterling Shepard. He could end up, you know, reaping the benefits of having Marshall and Beckham on each side of him. He could end up hauling in a lot of balls and winning some games. And secondly, I think on defense, I think Khalil Mack is going to be the pivot player because he's been moved back to linebacker. And will he put up stats that are worthy of a linebacker versus when he was a defensive lineman? Who wants to go next?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would say his pivotal player is probably Keenan Allen, as Tom mentioned before. Can he rise up and get the numbers with Goff throwing him the ball? You know, it's Goff's second year. You're older, you're wiser. And on defense, I probably tend to agree, Khalil Mack. It'll definitely depend and see if he can maintain. So he's got one player that he needs to have rise, and he has another player that needs to maintain.
Tom?
Yeah, I'm going to say, like I said earlier, Keenan Allen with another change, too, to the team itself, change on offense, scheme, and everything. He's got to definitely be one of the pivotal players if he's able to stay healthy or not. Guy's only 24 years old, still young, but too many surgeries, too many knee issues already. And on defense, I'm gonna go with Calais Campbell and see how he does as that leader down there with such a young group of kids on that Jacksonville defense. See how that change of scenery is from going from a contending team year in and year out to a team that's been scraping the barrel of the bottom all these years. See how that works for him.
Honorable mention of Rashard Perriman of Baltimore, because there's room for a receiver to step up there, and he is a deep threat guy before the injuries. Tom, we're looking at your team now. Bortles, I've already said, I think is a classic pivot player. On defense, I think Jatavis Brown and Denzel Perriman. I would say Brown first, Perriman second. Those are guys that one of those guys is going to hit for the now Los Angeles Chargers, and it's going to be a pivot point kind of player. Go ahead, Steve.
I'd say offensively, his pivot player is going to be Jordan Reed if he can return to form, and since every team is required to start a tight end, if he can separate himself with that tight end, he's going to do well. And defensively, I think I'm looking at Carl Joseph, safety in Oakland. I know he was very high on him when he drafted it, and he was an injury reserve for the better part of the year, but he started to emerge as a playmaker. And so if he can do that for 16 games, that can make a big difference.
And Tom?
For me, for my team, I'm looking at one of two different receivers. I'm looking at either how is Cameron Meredith going to be? Is he going to emerge as the new guy to look at Chicago, or is Marquise Lee going to be able to continue where he's at and make strides to go a little further on offense? And then for defense, it comes down to either Bud Dupree or Marcus Golden. I think either one of these two guys, I mean, Bud Dupree is going to get the shot now with Timmons going over to Miami. I see him getting his shot now, so he stays healthy, he could blow up. If not, I see Golden. He needs to make the next step with Calais Campbell out of there. He's going to be your other guy on the other end with Chandler Jones.
Let's move over to Tron's Pap Sixer. Sammy Watkins, I spoke earlier about being a pivot player. He is the guy that I'm picking from their team on offense. And on defense, tough call. I'm going to go with Dante Fowler, young defensive lineman who new defense maybe has a chance to shine. Steve, what do you think? Tron's Pap Sixer.
It's kind of a toss-up between Parker and Moncrief. Both those guys were supposed to do very well, and neither one of them really stepped up last year. So if you can get one of those guys to perform, that could certainly put his team in good shape. And defensively, yeah, I like the Fowler pick. Can Kwon Alexander keep playing out of his mind? If he keeps that up, that's definitely. But if he gets a drop off and comes back to earth, you know, drops 100 points back to the middle of the pack, that could hurt him.
Tom,
my two guys would be, as I mentioned before, Terrell Pryor coming to a new team, only has what 3-4 years. In the position of wide receiver, ex-quarterback in the college game, how he translates over as to try to be the number one in Washington. And on defense, it's got to be one of the two kids that he got last year. It'd either be Kersky or Benarik McKinney, one of them two guys. Are they going to be able to put up the same numbers they did last year, or are they going to come down a little bit?
Ipswich United is next. I'm going to pick Tyler Lockett as his offensive pivot player. Lockett, I think has a ton of upside. That is, he's going to be way underdrafted this year. He could play like a number one wide receiver. Defensively, it's Jalen Smith. If that gamble with the draft pick, if he can play up to potential, man, that's going to be a Kuechly-type player. Steve?
Yeah, I would say offensively, I would go with Eli Rogers. With Wheaton out of the picture now, Rogers should see more targets, and he could definitely blow up. He seemed to be a kind of a favorite target of Roethlisberger during the end of the season. And then defensively, yeah, Jalen Smith. See if that gamble paid off.
Tom. I'm gonna go with Danny Woodhead, like we said before. I think he might end up using this guy as a secondary offensive weapon, you know, one of his flex players with Ezekiel Elliott. I just see some of these numbers that possibly be coming out of Danny Woodhead, and Baltimore's going to need something out of that backfield because they're pretty depleted there. And defensive side, I'm going to go with Von Bell. I think rookie last year at Ohio State, I think the kid's going to – I think he's going to take that next step, and I think he's going to be their top guy in the backfield. I think he's going to give a run to the money for that Kenny Vaccaro guy.
Let's see if we can get downhill from here. And looking at Corey Coleman as being the pivot player there. Coleman to, you'd think, assume the number one wide receiver role there. And on defense, it's between Robert Quinn and Deontay Hightower. I'm going to go with Hightower. He scored 129 points last year. Now that he's going to be the main linebacker, Collins isn't going to be there. He could hit the 200 mark, I think, if things go right. Steve?
Offensively, I would go with Giovanni Bernard. See if he can come back from his injury and put up numbers like he did in 2015. And defensively, I would say his pivot player is Thomas Davis. Can he cheat Father Time one more year?
Offense, I'm going to go with Kelvin Benjamin. 2 years removed from the knee injury. Going to end up having to step up as being the true number one there on the team. Don't really have another proven guy other than Greg Olsen there. So those would be their two receivers on the team. And on defense, I don't know. I'm looking at the name that keeps jumping at me is Derek Johnson. Is he getting too old? Are the injuries starting to wear themselves out on him? Is he able to, you know, keep going? Kind of like Miss David.
Let's do the Stone Form Pallies, and then I think we're out of time for the episode. Lots of candidates on this team. I'm going to personally go with why did I freeze here? Well, Eddie Lacy's an obvious one. Tyler Eifert's an obvious one as well. I'm going to go with Lacy as the main offensive guy for reasons already stated. And on defense, I think Darren Lee is the guy that it's hit or miss. And if it's hit, it's going to be big. Steve?
For me, it's going to be Josh Doctson. He emerged as the number one guy in Washington, why I picked him so high last year. And defensively, it's either Darren Lee or Reggie Ragland. Those were two guys that I really was very high on, and hopefully, you know, Reggie can make an impact coming out of being on injured reserve all year, and then can Darren Lee pick up where he left off.
Devontae Adams is who I meant to say on offense, 244 points last year. Can he do that again? Tom, Stone Form Pallies.
Yeah, I was offense right away. I was going Josh Doctson just because of where he was picked and who's all left the team already. And also Reggie Ragland, what do you got there? That's what I'm wondering. So hopefully he'll be able to, you know, regain his career and be decent. He's not with this little setback at the injury at the rookie year.
Well, gentlemen, I'm afraid we're going to run out of time here. Guys, the ladies are lining up in front of Steve Wellman. The lights are blinking. It's time to wrap it up. It's closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. It's been a lot of fun, guys. Can't wait to do it again. We can finish up the Mad Dog Pivot Player Rundown. Last words, Steve.
Let's do it again.
Do it. Tom, last words.
Do it. 1-9
guys
for DJ.
Until next time, I'm Rick Goreski, thanking my co-hosts on today's show, Tom Buckles and Steve Wellman, for joining me. This has been another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Go home, everybody.